All right, ready? Say, hi, I'm Clara.
Hi, I'm Clara.
And welcome.
Welcome.
To the Agile.
No, the Mama. The Mommy.
Say Agile.
Agile.
Uprising.
Rising.
Podcast.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. Our topic for this show is Empowering the Changing Face of Agile. I'm Andy Cleff, and I'm joined by a stellar panel of guests. First, a new voice from Agile Alliance's Women in Agile 27th Conference, who got this whole ball rolling. So if it goes well, we credit you, Linda. Say hello.
Hi, thank you.
Next, from the 2017 and 2018 Organizing Committee, we have Jenny Tarwater. Hello.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Two mentors from the event, Faye Thompson.
Hey, everyone.
And Llewellyn Falco.
Glad to be here.
And rounding out the crew, we have a stellar hello coming from Emily Freeman. Good evening, Emily.
Hello. Good evening. Excited to be here.
It's great to have you all. The Women in Agile Workshop will be back at Agile 2018 this August for its third year with the title, Empowering the Changing Face of Agile. It's a half-day workshop designed to expand our reach as an Agile community. The overarching goal is to continue supporting, compassionately including traditionally underrepresented groups. This workshop also will provide an opportunity for new voices in the community to be heard as part of the program agenda. And if you're interested, listeners, you can submit a talk anytime between now and April 30th. We'll include a link to the submittal form in our show notes, or you can simply search for Women in Agile 2018. It'll come up likely the first results. Before we start in on the Lean Coffee format of tonight's show, I wanted to give each of our guests the opportunity to give a brief background. Linda, 30 seconds. You got me in the elevator, as well as 1,000 listeners.
So Scrum Master right now with Highland Software, internally at the company. Highland is at Westlake, Ohio. And I actually started out as a tester with an Agile team and became their part-time Scrum Master. And what was really fortunate is that the company saw a need for dedication in the role of Scrum Mastership. And I became one of the first full-time Scrum Masters at the company. And what's exciting now is that we're growing like exponentially. And where we started with 2 full-time Scrum Masters, we now have 9 full-time Scrum Masters with plans to hire 27 more. So it's a really exciting time at my company to be a part of all that growth.
That's a huge dedication to the craft or art of servant leadership. Bravo. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Hey, again, thank you for having me. So Jenny Tarwater, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. I've been an independent Agile coach and trainer for about 3 years now. I came from Sprint, where we transitioned from a more traditional organization to a truly Agile organization. I enjoyed that so much. I decided I want to do that all the time. So really my passion, though, is finding folks like me that were project managers that really want to work in this new way.
Faye.
My name is Faye Thompson, and I'm based in Columbus, Ohio. Right now, I'm with Cardinal Solutions Group as a consultant, Scrum Master, and Agile coach. I got my start in IT a long, long time ago, more on the product side, product owner, and then and sort of business analyst. And so now I really enjoy coaching at the team level and helping teams improve how they work together. But I really enjoy that product side of things as well. My free time, a huge part of my free time goes toward the Central Ohio Agile Association. We host the Path to Agility Conference every May. And one thing we've discovered over the years is we really like helping launch new voices, or as I say, helping people find their voice. So that's why I'm really excited to be a part of this new project.
Delightful. Lou. Welcome.
Hi, I'm a technical coach, and I did a lot with strong style pairing and mob programming and sort of just continuing that working together in this capacity to mentor some of the new voices and women in Agile.
Great. And Emily.
Hi, I'm Emily Freeman. I'm a developer advocate for Kickbox. We're a startup, and our API is a lot like reCAPTCHA with a whole lot of other features. I'm excited to join you all.
Great to have you here. So our first topic. In recognition of Women in History Month, which is the month of March in the U.S., I wanted to ask each of you to share with us some of the most influential women in history for you, some of your role models, and who are you reaching out and trying to influence in your capacity day to day. Emily, let's start with you.
Sure. So one of my personal heroes is Hillary Clinton. I know people feel, you know, one way or another about her, but regardless of the politics, she is a strong woman who has fought for what she believes in for 30 plus years and has slowly started to break down some of those walls that we find ourselves limited by in our own careers.
Lou, your thoughts?
For me, it's more personal. My mother was a programmer, so she brought a mainframe into our house when I was still in grade school, and grew up learning to program from her. And she's also a game inventor, created a game called Set. And so we just sort of grew up with puzzles and math and fun, and definitely influenced my love of learning and my love of math and my love of computers.
Is the mainframe still running? Is it in the garage?
Oh no, it is quite dead. It was the size of a filing cabinet.
Those were the days. Faye, some of your role models.
I'm going to say mine's pretty personal as well, not so much from an IT perspective, but my mom is a pretty big influence from an educational perspective. It's just something she always instilled in us growing up about the importance of continuing education. And then case in point, she just turned 88 and she's learning how to use her Microsoft Surface that we got her for Christmas. So this is a big deal. But I just grew up in a household that was always encouraging learning.
Beautiful. Jenny.
So I'm going to mention two, if I could. One is, of course, personal that many have mentioned, my mom, woman in the late 80s and 90s who was a CFO. And at that time, for some reason, in several of her jobs, she was also in charge of the network. So she would tinker and find things out, but we were kind of always in an IT kind of family. The person, though, that I think of when I think of who I look up toward is Carolyn Porco, who is a planetary scientist. And the reason that I kind of found her, stumbled upon her, was I was watching TV one day in the mid-90s, and she was being interviewed, and it was an entire room full of computers, right, as they were watching the Voyager and the Cassini missions. And all these terminals and all these men and Carolyn. And I just became very curious how she got there. How did she handle herself in that room full of men? And she's a fascinating person. I really recommend following on Twitter and anywhere that you can hear her speak.
Nice. Who's in the left? Linda, women in history, some of your role models.
When I think of a role model, the first person that comes to mind is Grace Hopper. And I know for those of us in tech, that name sort of pops up a lot. But I think she was just a really powerful woman in a time that, you know, women were not seen as, well, you know, very powerful or very you know, up to the task of coding or taking charge of computers, right? She was a university professor, and then she joined the Navy Reserve because she was too old to join the actual Navy, and she retired as a Navy Rear Admiral, and she just did so much for programming. And one of the things, one of the quotes that kind of reminds me every day of what we need to do sort of in our role in the Agile community is that she said, humans are allergic to change. They love to say, we've always done it this way. And so she was just sort of unapologetic in pushing change forward, but in a way that was, you know, to the benefit of the community. So she is really a powerful role model for me.
So speaking of change, let's move the topic over to gender and technology. We've got a couple of possible lean coffee carts to pull here. Linda, do you want to pick one from the backlog there?
Sure. Let's see what we've got here. How can we encourage more support and less competition between each other? And when you say each other, you would assume between the genders, between men and women. What I found in the last Women in Agile conference is that many women were coming to the conference and actually participating in the open space and almost feeling a little uncomfortable. And Llewellyn came up with a great word to describe this. Co-opetition.
That's awesome.
That is not my invention of the word, just to be fair.
Yeah, but it's used in the best of ways here, I feel, Llewellyn. I really do. Sometimes as women, we come in and we feel like maybe we're not going to be accepted by each other or we're going to be judged by each other, right? And we almost feel like if we get a group of women together, that's going to be exacerbated in some way. I actually attended an open space session where a woman, Kathy, was actually talking about this in her work, where she felt as if her coworkers were actually competing with her rather than building her up. And she didn't feel like she had a way to get any advice on how to deal with this. She didn't feel like she had a place to go to talk about this, to get any advice on this. And she didn't feel like anybody else was actually experiencing this with her. And so she felt alone in this. And when she spoke with us as a group, she felt so empowered and so sort of surrounded by others that she understood that it was okay, that she could talk about this, that she could get advice about this. And it was just empowering to her to understand that it was okay, that other people were feeling this too, and that she had a community now that she could get advice from, both in the moment and in the future.
I have some thoughts on this, if I can just jump in.
Absolutely.
So I heard a quote one time, and I have no idea where the reference is, so forgive me, whomever. But it was basically that the trick of the status quo, and I say status quo because it's hard to say, like, when we talk about diversity and we only talk about, like, us versus white men, it makes it very combative, and I don't like that approach. But the trick of the status quo is that they make you feel as if there's only one seat at the table for the rest of us, and we have to fight over that one seat. And the trick is that that's not the case, right? We deserve equal representation as all groups, right? So that the table is diverse. And so approaching that and making sure, so like one of the rules I have is even if I disagree with a woman at work, I will not fight with her or voice that disagreement in a group setting. And it may seem like a like overthinking it, but I think when you as a woman or any other underrepresented group naysay another of that other group, then you're going to give others an excuse to just sort of undermine their authority and their intelligence and their contributions. And so I'll definitely talk to people about stuff in person, but I do my best to keep that sort of private and make sure that I also bump people's ideas in meetings. You know, if someone's not being heard, it's really important to amplify that.
I wonder how often we assume that the other group is offering one seat at the table and all of our collective imposter syndromes kick in, when in reality, we know it's not true. We should do what we could to encourage in each other the notion that that's not true and stop talking about how many seats are at the table, or stop talking with others about how many seats there are at the table, and talk about the topic that needs to be discussed. I do think some of that happens. I'm not at all denying that there are people who don't even want that one open seat to be there. But I think a lot of times we stop ourselves, and there's no need to do that.
I want to flip the coin over. Is there something that the overrepresented groups can do better to make room for the underrepresented groups? The listeners can't see me, but I'm a middle-class white male, and I'm overrepresented in many places. So I am interested in what I can do, what my cohort can do, to make events more welcoming, to become aware of our blind spots. And I throw open the gates to hear, because they're blind spots for a reason. I don't see them.
For sure. Yeah.
One of the simplest things is just to ask the way you just did. I'll go back to last year's Women in Agile Conference, 2017. And one of the open sessions that was convened was opened by Declan Whelan. And he asked the same question. If I'm someone who is in a position of overrepresentation, what can I do? I don't want to be treating anyone unfairly. I want to be a part of the solution. What can I do? And to me, that session was fantastic because I think we had most of the men who attended the event in that small group, which actually I want to take this moment to shout out to and say that men are absolutely invited to the Women in Agile Conference. There was a little confusion over that last year. They're absolutely welcome. And in this group, the men came, they asked that. And to me, it was a fantastic conversation because it also highlighted the fact that women, as with all of humanity, we are not one unified lockstep group of people who all think the same way. So it turned out, you know, what one person thought would be beneficial, what might help move the needle forward. Another person said, no, not at all. I don't want that at all. But the important thing for me was the conversation. And there was a great work product that came out of that. Chris Merman attended that conversation along with Lynn Winterbore, and they blogged about it afterwards. So we can make that available in the show notes as well, a link to that if people want to hear kind of the outcomes of that conversation.
Yeah, and if I could, there's one other thing that came out of that session, Faye, that was just kind of remarkable to me that I had not thought about. And I can't remember. I think it was Ronica that had mentioned this, but giving pause, just pause for a moment and don't be the first person to speak up. Give those other folks in the room an opportunity to think through a little bit about what they want to say and just give them space.
So you mentioned Declan's session and the open space, and Faye also mentioned the open space. But I was realizing a lot of the listeners might never have attended an open space, and even though it's a core part of our conference, do you mind just explaining a little bit more about what that is and how it works?
Sure. So the agenda that we have last year is, we're going to repeat a little bit this year, in that we have a keynote, an open space, the Launching New Voices program. And so what we're referencing right now is that, you know, middle slot where we will have an open space, likely two sessions again. We'll have a marketplace where people suggest topics, right? And so this is a great way to crowdsource what topics are important to those folks in the room. Someone will convene each of those sessions. They'll have some good conversation. Hopefully there's a work product out of it. Like Faye mentioned, Chris Merman's blog post from the Declan session last year. But you can talk through some of these issues that are important to you. Some of them are very tactical. Some of them are kind of more esoteric. But it's a great way for the folks that are there to help shape and direct the conversation in a way that does not happen quite as organically when you're working from kind of an agenda that's fixed or that somebody else has given to you. So our hope with the open space is that whatever's most important to the folks in the room is what gets discussed and what gets talked about.
That's a wonderful format. I'll toss this out to the group. So April Wenzel has a keynote coming up. Traditional professional advice. Can someone tell us more about the topic?
I've seen April speak and she's amazing. So I don't know about this particular topic, but she's just a phenomenal speaker with a lot to say.
Where have you heard her before, Emily?
Rocky Mountain Ruby.
Technical conference?
It is a Ruby-centric conference, but we usually do about like half culture talks, half more technical talks.
So April is a coder who's based in San Diego right now. She's a founder of Compassionate Coding. She's giving this keynote, and then she's also, before this keynote, she's going to be one of our keynotes at Path to Agility. Tiny little plug. But she's going to be talking about emotional intelligence and social consciousness. And you should follow her on Twitter because she spurs fantastic conversations. And they're all around how we interact in the workplace and how a lot of our traditional notions of competition and ambition over cooperation and compassion are just outdated. And I am most excited because to me, this is where the money is. This is where Agile comes into play, right? If we're actually going to make a change we can do it with Agile, and this is where it happens. It happens in how we treat each other at work, and then that changing landscape improves the work that we do.
And not just in relation to gender, right? I think when we approach everyone with empathy, it improves the entire work dynamic.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So for me, Agile was the first conference, like in the different types of conferences I go to, that sort of acknowledged that software was created by people, and maybe paying attention to how people work could help software be created better. And so that's always been sort of something I really appreciate about Agile. Linda Rising in particular has been always sort of amazing to me on her focus on people and cognitive science, and it really sort of got me into that entire area of interest. And then once the Project Aristotle study came out of Google, where they saw that, you know, team intelligence was trumping individual performance just by a few orders of magnitude, just sort of gave that extra, you know, weight of data behind something that sort of always been sort of taken for granted, I think, at the Agile level.
I also think showing up with compassion helps us bring people up over that learning curve that comes with every change. We started earlier talking about change and how difficult it can be, status quo, and the transition from project manager with the iron fist and the velvet glove to servant leader of Scrum Master. And there's that compassion and that understanding of what's going on inside their amygdala as they're freaking out, as their world is changing around them, that we can all bring at some level and help them make positive change, help them do experiments in areas that maybe they aren't so comfortable and fail safely. I look forward to her keynote speech as well. Faye, so you brought up the topic earlier. You mentioned imposter syndrome. Let's dive in there and unpack that. Anybody want to go first?
Sure. This is Jenny. I would love to talk about this topic. This was something that I kind of focused on last year. So Billy, who was one of the one of the organizers last year for the Launching New Voices program, she conducted an imposter syndrome session in the Audacious Salon last year at Agile 2017, and I missed it and heard so much good stuff about it. I kind of conjured it up here in Kansas City so that I could go. And just so thankful that I did. So Billy's session really helped. First of all, I always find that one of the things I love about the Agile community is they put names to things that are so recognizable. Like, I've had imposter syndrome my whole life. I just didn't know everybody else did at times. I didn't know what to call it. I didn't know, you know, what the spell was to get through it. And so to some extent, I say, Billy, you fixed me, because she helped me recognize something that was extremely powerful. We were talking about some of the things that, you know, make you nervous or hold you back. And she made a statement that the scariest place on the whole earth can be in your own head.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
And that it was such a on point statement. And I said, yeah, that's the one that's following me into the room and saying, you don't know what you're doing. So this idea of imposter syndrome is that you are not qualified, right? That people are going to find you out. And it really can hold you back from, you know, being your whole self and your authentic self. So I don't know if Billy should plan on having that session again, but would highly recommend it. The other thing that I've really come to realize this year is that some of the people that I've looked up to, I've gotten to know a little bit better, and I see that everything doesn't go perfectly for them, right? So I used to think when things didn't go perfectly for me, it was a flaw in how I had prepared, or just a flaw in my personality, you know? And what I'm realizing is that everybody is going through their learnings. Everybody is pushing their boundaries, and it's how you deal with that. So a lot of the people that maybe I looked up to, I didn't realize that they had cohorts and mentorship circles and such, and that we saw this brilliance coming out of them on podcast and in, you know, Agile conferences and in books. And they worked through that with other people. And so I just, that's one of the ways that I'm combating my imposter syndrome these days is just being vulnerable and exposing that to people and saying, I don't know, can you help me? Can I run this by you? Can I see if this is valid?
So speaking of vulnerability, what is something that used to hold you back and now makes you laugh when you look at it in hindsight? Who's got something to share?
Can I ask a specific question? I want to know, Linda, what made you hit submit last year?
So I actually have a mentor within my organization, Jeremy Willits, and he's an amazing speaker. He's spoken at a few conferences, and he just keeps telling me, you know, you won't know until you try, and forwarded me the information, and he just seemed to have this faith in me that I didn't have. And I just kept hearing his voice that I won't know until I try. And it was really kind of a leap of faith. Honestly, when I think back about it, I don't know what made me submit. But I think what's interesting, and this goes back to the imposter syndrome, is that when I got accepted, I was like, I really did think that there was a mistake, that those great women that were in charge of this session had just seriously made a mistake. But I thought, well, you know, it's for new voices, and they're just going to be kind enough to let me hone my craft, and the poor other women that are sitting through this will just, you know, sit through 7 minutes of some, you know, amazing mess that I've put together with the help of this wonderful mentor that doesn't even know what they're getting themselves into. Lynn Winterbor was my mentor. And then I'll get off the stage and hopefully keep some of my dignity. And what was interesting is that I got done, and I was, thanks to Lynn, much more successful than I thought it was going to be. One person really resonated with me. A woman named Michelle came up to me afterwards, and she said, I need to have lunch with you. And she said, I am a tester right now. And my talk was basically my story of who I am and where I've been, my journey, but in a little bit more detail about, you know, the different steps that I took to get my teams more involved in the Agile process. And Michelle came up to me and she said, I am a tester and I'm now a part-time Scrum Master and I'm moving to become a full-time Scrum Master and I need your help. I'm now in your shoes. And so the thought that there's going to be one person in that audience that you are going to impact at least. And so you need to hit submit. You need to tell your story. You need to talk to those people in the audience.
And isn't it amazing how you being at your best lifts other people up as well and allows them and gives them permission to be their best? So you're not hitting submit just for you. You're hitting submit for everyone.
Absolutely.
So that also reminds me of something Jessica Kerr says a lot, right? When she's designing talks, she sort of says, like, people always think that if you're going to give a talk, it's because you have this like massive expertise. Mm-hmm. In the subject you're talking about, but really what you should be doing is giving a talk to you last year. Right? Like, because like that, she was you last year, right? Like, she's like, you just walked the path I'm about to walk, and can you give me the steps? And you actually, I think, like, the farther you are away from that, the harder it is. Like, it's really hard for me to, like, even, you know, empathize with the 20-year-old self of myself.
Yeah.
But, you know, like it's just, that person is dead to me.
Thank God, right?
I can still remember last year. And so sometimes when people are thinking like, I don't know enough, like you don't need to know a lot. You just need to know, you know, more than you knew last year and help the, you know, just thousands of people like you who are about to walk that same path. And if you can help them out, that's the right thing. And obviously, you know, it worked for you.
Yep.
And thank you so much for sharing your story about what led you to hitting submit and getting up on stage. You did knock it out of the park. And I know that Lynn helped you, but you put the time in and you prepared and you knocked it out of the park.
Thank you.
I know there's still someone who's sitting at home right now or in their car right now listening to this podcast, and they're thinking, yeah, I can kind of identify with her, but nobody wants to hear what I have to say because, well, I don't have this big expertise to share. So I'm happy, Llewellyn, that you shared that, because these are not talks about how you are going to change everyone's life with Agile. This is your talk of your topic that you, that means something to you. Yours was about your personal journey to get where you are today. Someone else might choose a different topic, but it doesn't change the fact that you are the expert of your own experience, and no one can write that for you and no one can take it away from you. And your expertise, your experience resonated with that other attendee, and that's fantastic. And I'm sure it did for others too, who just didn't come up and chat.
But we'll find you through the show notes and ping you and say, I couldn't find you after your talk, Linda, but I really wanted to say thank you. You mentioned, I think all of us have mentors in our lives, and sometimes they give us a kick, but as you said, Linda, and I think you emphasized, Faye, it was just a little nudge, and sometimes that's all it takes. Yeah, you can do it. Doesn't need to be perfect. So what are some things that we can mentor the younger groups? I don't want to restrict it to just younger girls, but they are definitely underrepresented in tech. But the younger generation, as if they aren't dreaming big enough already, but what are some things that we could offer them? So Emily, you have a 2-year-old, right?
yeah.
And we're,
who I should say is running in and out of the room, and you all are being very patient with us.
She's so quiet, and we're gonna have her on the show. We're gonna try to get her to do the bumper, and it'll just be adorable. And then she'll listen back in 20 years and hate us. as parents, and for those of us that are raising kids, what advice do we give them? What nudges do we give them? How do we unlock their motivation? How do we build resilience? What are some thoughts?
I think chasing every one of their interests with a childlike abandon allows them to remain curious and enthusiastic. And it makes it so much more about like growth mindset and working hard towards something and putting passion into something than it is that you're just good at something and therefore that's the path that God intended you to do. I think the latter is very limiting. And I think it, you know, for me, I never even considered a CS degree because I sucked at math, right? Like my math teacher called me stupid. There's something you don't do. You don't tell students they're stupid. Because that like shaped how I viewed math and my ability to go further in any kind of STEM field. And so I went in the humanities because that's what I'm naturally good at. And not that you shouldn't do that, but I think having a healthy interest and willingness to be initially bad at something is a gift we can give young kids.
I think it's kind of built into our agile processes, the idea of celebrating failures, and it's okay to fail. It's something that I'm so something that I talk about with my team so much, but it's also something that it's one of the first things that I tell my mentees now that, you know, at my company we've got all these new scrum masters coming in. You know, we always say it's a 2-week iteration. It's okay to fail. It's good to fail. What are you going to learn from failing? So I think that goes a lot to what you're talking about, Emily, is, you know, don't be afraid to fail, like celebrate it.
Yes, I love that. Celebrate it. And especially if you're like a senior or principal engineer on your team, letting the rest of the team know when you screw up or make a mistake is huge, right? Because it gives them permission to take small risks and potentially fall flat on their face without the fear of like, oh, I'm going to be fired. My name's going to come up in the postmortem. Everyone's going to hate me, you know.
I love Etsy's 3-arm sweater. Have you all heard of it?
No, and I love the idea.
Etsy has a they call it their epic F up. And that's what they give out to. So the one that sort of blasted all the development channels was a brand new developer was hired, and they do pair programming. So the first week that you're hired, you start programming, and you're paired with a senior developer. And so this developer put a change into the code base that was supposed to be very simple, but it actually brought down their whole site. And instead of, this guy thought he was going to get fired, but they gave him the three-arm sweater award because they said, thank you for finding this crazy flaw in our security. And so, I think that is a major sort of, message that we need to send to everyone. Thank you. Not you're fired.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a fun story. And I'll see if I can find a link to it. But it's so refreshing because in other places that many of us have been, the real fear of screwing up big just looms, and it prevents people from hitting that submit button. We got a few more minutes before we need to wrap up. So this is the toss-up. Any topics go. Anybody have something that they want to throw out to the group?
So we were talking earlier about the importance of having people that you like role models to go into. And so often when you're in college or stuff, you don't have anyone that you do have as a role model, right? And that really impacts your you were talking about imposter syndrome and are you in the right career? Are you in the right place? It's really, really valuable to know somebody, right, and to have a mentor or have a confidant. And most of the time, the places we learn those things were at conferences, right? And I know that, for me personally, and for everyone that I've talked to on the committees, the people that we've met at conferences, those are really, really important to us. That's what keeps pushing us. And if you know someone specifically, if you have a friend who is a woman and is just starting her career, they usually aren't, companies usually don't send new people to conferences. Conferences are sort of reserved for older, more senior people, usually people at higher in management. This conference is purposely set at $50, right? So it's you can just send somebody there. And just getting in a room with other people who you can look at and identify with it, means so much. And so I just want to sort of throw out that this is maybe a good time to not just think about should I go to the conference, but who should I send to the conference? If you really want to be an ally, a really great way to be an ally is find somebody who doesn't realize they need to be there and help them to get there.
I love that so much. It's such a small investment for a company.
So small. Or just even small investment for a person.
Yeah. And I think that some people are really afraid of the idea of networking, right? I don't want to go into a room with 120 people. I'm not looking for a job right now. So there's no outcome here, right? There's nothing I need right now. I had a mentor a few years back where her specialty was really in networking. And I loved her approach. She said, if you feel dirty, if you feel like you're faking it, if you feel like you're trying to get something from someone, you're doing it all wrong, right? Networking is this curiosity about other people and what they're doing currently, what they've done in the past. And then maybe a connection happens there, but more likely a connection happens later, or when you meet the next person, you think about something they had in common or something that would be worthwhile for them to know about each other. And it has this real exponential effect, right? And there is some real, serendipity here of, oh my gosh, Emily, we met today and you were talking about something that reminds me of someone that I want to introduce you to. And that's my little dopamine drip that I get is when I can connect to people and it's a genuine connection, even though it didn't directly benefit me, it all comes back in spades. So the Women in Agile networking element of it, I think, because, you know, we do have a formal networking event right after the conference. But even within the sessions, within the open spaces, there's such an opportunity to have authentic conversations with people that have little Agile experience, little corporate experience, decades of experience, and everyone comes at it with a real genuine curiosity.
For conferences, all the action's in the front row. So you go to a conference and you sit in the front row. I promise you, this will save you so much time and energy. One, no one's up there, so free open seating, you can spread out. Two, all the speakers are up there. And guess what? They're human beings and they want to talk to people just like you. So we're not experts that only go on stage and then leave. We are humans. We want to connect with you. And so, yeah, sit in the front row and start up a conversation.
Actually, Emily, can I tag on that? My partner is a speaker and usually keynotes. And one of the things a lot of people don't realize is there quite a lot of speakers are actually quite introverted.
It's so true.
One of the reasons that they like to speak is actually because people will come and talk to them and they don't have to go and talk to them. But as she's like gotten better and gotten to more keynotes, she's found like people get more and more nervous. Like, can I approach someone? And like, if you see a speaker and they are not currently in a conversation, like, you should not in any way think you are interrupting. They want you to come and talk to you. They crave conversation just as much as like you want to talk to them. And so if you're sitting there and you're like, oh, that person is too awesome for me to talk to, like, just get over that. Say hi.
Well, speaking of staying in contact, I will include for each of you connection info in the show notes so people can keep in touch between now and the next time we cross paths. In closing, is there anything you want to cover that we didn't cover? Some shout outs, some events between now and then?
Well, one of the things I do want to make sure that's very clear for the listeners is that the Launching New Voices program for this conference, we want people that have not had experience speaking in a to an audience. They haven't been compensated. They haven't maybe spoken to more than a handful of folks, maybe even outside of their company before. So if you have any desire to do that sort of thing, we are pairing you with mentors, right? So we will select three folks that have not had that opportunity. We will pair them with folks like Faye and Llewellyn. Cheryl Hammond is actually our third mentor this year. We've got a great, great group. And they'll meet several times between June 1st and the actual event and get mentoring on their talks. So this is the format that we used last year. And Linda, of course, was one of the speakers. And I think all three of our new voices really knocked it out of the ballpark last year. So don't hesitate to submit. Exactly like Faye said, just submit. Just hit submit.
Emily, what do you got coming up?
I will be at RailsConf this year. I'm super excited about that. It's my first time at RailsConf, and I'm launching there a new talk called The Intelligence of Instinct, kind of thinking about our gut feelings as less feelings and more our brain taking a bunch of stimuli and distilling it into one sort of signal to us and how we can apply that to code smell and, you know, bad feelings about deploys, that kind of thing.
Nice. Lou, what are you cooking?
So there's the Mob Programming Conference coming up in Boston. That's in about a month's time. Piggybacked with the Agile Games Conference, there's the Deliver Agile Conference coming up in Austin, Texas. We're going to do more deep dives. We got the Craft Conference coming up in Budapest if you're in Europe over on that side of the seas, and of course Agile 2017 coming up in San Diego, started with by the fabulous Women in Agile conference that Sunday before.
Faye?
Next up, I'll be at Codapalooza co-keynoting with Ryan Ripley, and we'll be talking about collaborative curiosity. So this is a a talk that centers around learning through what you've learned through the conference and how you take that back and use it. But we turn the format around and we make the audience the product owner of what we discuss. So it really becomes a whole conference facilitated conversation. And then after that, I will be at Better Software West out in Las Vegas the first week of June, talking about the impact that neuroscience has on the strength of our teams and how we can recognize some of the stimuli that come in and how they can positively or negatively impact information processing and what we can do about it.
Fascinating topic. I'd love to hear more about that. Maybe that's a whole nother show. Linda, what's your spring look like?
Well, in terms of conferences, I am focused very heavily on making sure that our Women in Agile conference is off without a hitch with the help of Jenny and everyone else. For my work, Highland Software in Westlake, Ohio is doing a lot of hiring for all the Agile positions on an Agile team. Scrum Masters, product owners, and all the way up to product management. So if you're interested or you have anybody that might fill that position or any of those positions, feel free to get in contact with
me. Great. And Jenny, what do you got coming up?
So I am also going to be at Agile Games in Boston here in a few weeks doing a deep dive on brain-based training. And then I'm going to be a participant in the Mob Programming Conference, which I'm really excited about, especially as what would be deemed as a non-technical person. I haven't coded for about 18 years, so excited about that. I'm doing innovation games for teams at Agile Main Day. And then here locally in Kansas City, what makes Agile work and tools for your Agile tool belt to Agile for Executive sessions at KC IT.
Well, that is all the time we've got for this show. Hope to see many of you at Women in Agile. That's Sunday afternoon, August 5th in San Diego, opening up Agile 2018. If you're interested in submitting a talk, deadline is April 30th. And remember, perfection is the enemy of good enough for now. So just hit submit. I want to say thanks again to our panel of guests and to you, our listening audience. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a review, a rating, or leave some comments on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcasting platform of choice. If this is your first time tuning in, why don't you subscribe and catch the next episode? And finally, if you'd like to share your ideas about driving change and compassionately including all underrepresented groups in our community, please join the conversation at coalition.agileuprising.com. Until next time, this is Andy Clef for the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing out.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.